From Mississippi Public Broadcasting, it's Southern Remedy on MPB Think Radio. I'm Gene Edwards, along with Dr. Rick DeShazo, Professor of Medicine and Pediatrics at the University of Mississippi Medical Center. Southern Remedy is funded by UMC, the Foundation for Public Broadcasting in Mississippi, and listeners like you.
To whom we say thank you and good morning.
And welcome in here. We've got a lot to do today. We are going to talk about cancer, and our program is themed around a program that's going to be a special on PBS tonight. We welcome your phone calls. We've got a couple of very special guests. The phone lines are open. 1-877-MPB-RING is the number to call. The latest developments in the treatment of cancer.
If you're taking Total Body Formula, stay on board.
Southern Remedy next.
You're listening to Southern Remedy on MPB Think Radio. To call the show, dial 1-877-MPB-RING. 877-672-7464 or email southernremedy@mpbonline.org. Think Radio, Mississippi Public Broadcasting.
Wednesday morning and welcome into Southern Remedy on MPB Think Radio. I'm Gene Edwards along with Dr. Rick DeShazo, and the topic today is cancer and the truth about cancer, a PBS special which we will be a part of tonight. In spite of really good news about lower cancer death rates and newer, safer treatments, cancer remains the second leading cause of death in the United States. Cancer does not discriminate when it comes to race or sex or age. Anybody can get cancer. And the American Cancer Society estimates that half the men and one-third of the women in the United States will develop cancer in their lifetime.
And I hope nobody will turn their radio off until we get through the program. It's, you know, in my family, I don't know about yours, Gene, but when cancer was mentioned when I was growing up, it was always in the context of let's go in another room and talk, you know, real
right.
low where
right.
nobody can hear about it. It was sort of like, you know, the scourge, whatever that was. And the whole approach to cancer diagnosis and treatment has changed. And I think we're in a much more optimistic period than we were when I grew up. And I think the guests that we have today will really make that point. But it was interesting that you went into shock when I talked about total body formula.
Yes.
We received a CDC health advisory yesterday about a product that I've seen people use around here a lot.
At the gym. Right.
Called Total Body Mega Formula. And total body formula. Anyway, the short of this is that both of these compounds contain too much chromium and selenium, and people are getting intoxicated with those chemicals.
And what happens if you're intoxicated with those chemicals?
If you get selenium toxicity, the biggest concern that I have would be significant hair loss. In fact, I'm trying to get a hair transplant. I'm having the hair taken off my legs and put on my head. But
well, there's an attractive thought.
Yeah. But you can get hair loss, muscle cramps, diarrhea, joint pains, and skin problems. And with chromium, you can get all kinds of other problems, including liver and others.
So if you're taking that stuff,
don't do it.
Don't do it.
And talk to somebody. Guess who we have today? We have some people that I think our radio listeners are familiar with. The first is Dr. Barbara Kraft, who is completing her training in our Division of Hematology Oncology and will soon be our leader of our breast cancer program. We've been hoping and praying for a long time to get a young woman to pick this up. And Barbara was one of our chief residents at UMC and is an outstanding individual who we have had our eyes on for a long time. And so we're bringing her along today to talk a little bit about breast cancer and other cancers. So welcome, Barbara.
We are glad to have you here.
Thank you. I'm glad
welcome.
To be here.
Welcome.
And then she brought her grandfather, Dr. Ralph Vance. I think everybody knows Dr. Vance that's ever had a relative or anybody with cancer in the state. And Dr. Vance is one of those hidden treasures we have here in Mississippi and at UMC. He's internationally known in the area of cancer, served as president of the American Cancer Society. I'm not talking about the Mississippi chapter. I'm talking about the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And has been on study sections and investigational panels and expert panels at the National Institutes of Health, the NCI, National Cancer Institute, since he was a child. He's now 95 years old. And no, he's not. He's a young, good-looking guy. And so, Ralph, welcome.
Pleasure to have you here. First time, isn't it?
No, he's second time. Oh, it sounded like Dave Letterman. He's back for another.
I zone out. I'm sorry. Well, we got to know each other during the treatment of a friend of ours who had cancer, Larry McCool. The story followed by an awful lot of people went into remission and then came back. And sadly, we lost Larry a few years ago. Watching the PBS special, which is going to be on tonight, which is called The Truth About Cancer, and we will follow with a live broadcast of this program tonight. I am so depressed watching it. I mean, how do you find hope every day?
Well, Gene, you know, when I started my fellowship, as Rick alluded to 100 years ago, it was actually 30 years ago, and at that time, the five-year survival rate for most cancers was somewhere in the mid-30s. Well, now we know that it's at least two-thirds five-year survival.
So that means that 75% of people, the average person who comes in with cancer, will live 5 years.
Yes.
In just that short period of time.
And that's taken all comers, including skin cancers, too.
Right. And it's the result of what?
Well, it's a result of basic research, clinical trials, such as the Southwest Oncology Group, the Gynecologic Oncology Group, NCI grants, and then application of those entities. So,
and Barbara, what about for breast cancer? Same survival? What are the survival statistics now compared to?
It is improving as well. I know several years ago they looked and there were about 141,000 new cases, and actually the death rate from that is significantly lower, around 30,000 to 40,000.
So when someone's diagnosed now,
there's hope.
Well, help me with this one. I've sort of been told that breast cancer is an occupational hazard of being a female, and prostate cancer is an occupational hazard of being a male. If you live long enough, your risk of getting either one, whether you're male or female, is really high. Is that a true fact, or is that just a myth?
That is true, and certainly age is the greatest risk factor. Obviously, breast cancer is more prominent in females, but as women get older, their risk of breast cancer increases.
And one of the points that's made in the documentary that'll be on tonight is that a lot of the blame for all of this goes to the heart doctors, who are letting us live longer, and the inevitability of cancer as you live longer. Is that right?
That is absolutely true. The heart doctors have made huge strides over the past 25 years and allowing us to age. And as we age, as we get over the age of 50,
cells
we're increasing our chances of getting cancer.
Cells mutate. Things right. happen. Is that right?
Absolutely. So we can talk about that.
Our number is 877-MPB-RING. We'd like to hear your story. We'd like to talk to you about your situation. 1-877-MPB-RING. Think Radio Mississippi Public Broadcasting. The program is Southern Remedy. And John's been holding on there in State Line. Hi, John.
Good morning.
Welcome in.
Thank you so much. My mom's 83 and went in for basically a routine physical some time ago. And she was diagnosed with a melanoma, which is on her lower leg. And interestingly enough, I looked up on the computer, and it said that that's very common in females to have a melanoma on the lower leg. I guess my question is, at her age, 83, and quite frankly, she's in poor health. She can walk, but seems to have lost her vitality. What would be the course of treatment? She has a appointment scheduled literally, coming up very shortly here with a surgeon.
Gotcha. Let me just make sure that our listeners are up to the same place you are on this. Melanoma is a usually pigmented but not always colored tumor, skin cancer, that usually develops out of what looks like a mole or some other thing on your skin. It is not the most common skin cancer. The most common skin cancers are the sun-related cancers, the squamous cells and the basal cells. This is the one that, quote, everybody fears the most because you can't just whack it off. So, and why is melanoma a worse tumor than the other ones?
Well, Rick, if you can't excise a melanoma, then you have to use other modalities. And right now, clinical trials would be the way to go for treating a melanoma. People who are at risk for melanoma are those people who have light skin. Caucasians have more melanoma than African Americans. A family history of melanoma increases your chances. Marked freckling of the upper back. Multiple nevi, like Dr. Rick just said. The closer to the equator that we live, the higher the risk.
Now, as I understand it, John, and we got the experts, so I'm just leading them into whatever they want to say on this, but the prognosis of a melanoma depends on how deep and thick it is. So the first step is to cut it out and get really wide margins and right. see and stage it. And so there's this staging thing?
Yes. Then it would be important, John, for your mother to be assessed as far as whether the melanoma has spread from that primary site to, like, regional lymph nodes or to other places. And if it has not, then depending upon how deep it is, like Dr. Rick said, then that may be all that she needs is just to have it excised.
Okay, very good. I kind of thought that it's just a matter of really right now wait and see how the surgery goes.
You don't have to hang any crepe at all at this point. You just need to see what's going on. Has it been there a while, or you just discovered it?
We don't know. That's just something that we didn't have any idea or that she had it, nor did she. And she's, like I said, went in for a routine physical, and the doctor just happened to say, well, we need to check this.
Right. Okay, I hope that helped.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, John, very much. Thanks. Let's go to a call from Blue Springs in a couple of seconds. We're going to take our break. We have special guests with us today. Dr. Barbara Kraft is here. Dr. Ralph Vance is here. We are talking about the truth about cancer, and we're taking your calls at 1-877-MPB-RING. Dr. Rick is here, and we'll be back right after a break.
Mississippi Public Broadcasting is committed to offering diverse and engaging programming. On the weekend, MPB Think Radio invites you to tune in and relax. It's the time to sing along.
So Prairie Home Companion, coming to you live from the Fitzgerald Theater.
Spend time together.
A splendid table, the show for people who love to eat.
And even laugh.
You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to talk about cars.
Come unwind and enjoy with us. Weekends on MPB. Tune in, relax, Think Radio, MPB.
You're listening to Southern Remedy on MPB Think Radio. To call the show, dial 1-877-MPB-RING, 877-672-7464, or email southernremedy@mpbonline.org. Think Radio, Mississippi Public Broadcasting.
And we're back on Southern Remedy at Mississippi Public Broadcasting. We're talking today about our special tonight, The Truth About Cancer, on PBS and the MPB television stations. And we'll be on again immediately after that show with these folks and answering questions from folks like you, including Suzanne in Blue Springs. Hi there.
Good morning.
Welcome in.
Thank you.
What's your question?
I had received one of these email chain letter things discussing a correlation between the use of antiperspirant preparations and an increased risk for breast cancer, and wondered how much truth there was to it, or if this is another urban legend making the rounds.
Dr. Kraft, what do you think?
Actually, this has been discussed, especially in some of the European countries.
They don't use deodorants in the European countries. I've been over there. That's one of the reasons I'm a happy American.
But I do think that there is some concern about the aluminum in the antiperspirants causing an increased risk at breast cancer. The American Cancer Society as well has discussed this, but right now, there is no reliable evidence to link these two things together. And so I would not stop using your antiperspirants at present.
Now, let's make sure that Dr. Rick always talks about the difference between an antiperspirant and a deodorant. You can get compounds at Walmart, these things, without the perspirant part, which is the aluminum part. So for some reason you're freaked by this, you have a family history of breast cancer, so forth, you can just simply get an anti-deodorant, and that means you're going to perspire a little bit more, but that's the way to deal with it. If it bugs you, just don't use them. You don't have to. You won't smell bad because you'll still use the anti-deodorant part.
That's right.
How's that?
Okay, Suzanne?
That's great. That answered my question.
Thanks.
Thank you.
We appreciate your call. Thank you. Let's go to Helena, Arkansas, and Paulette. Hi there. How are you?
Good morning. I just wanted to make a comment on the man who called in about his mother with the melanoma on the leg.
Right.
And just that something like that can be extremely serious, and that make sure that he follows up on whatever the doctor said. Recently had a family member to pass with the exact same description that he said, and it was removed in January, and it grew back. And after it grew back, they had to do MRIs and found that it had spread into the lymph nodes in the groin area. And finally, when the diagnosis was made in November, University of Tennessee finally gave up hope in March.
It
took about 2 months.
Let me tell you what frequently happens with this, and I'm trying to protect my oncology colleagues here. What frequently happens is folks develop these funny-looking things on the lower leg or arms or elsewhere, and the surgeons who cut them off don't really think there's a high probability of them being melanomas, and they don't cut enough margin out. When you take off a melanoma, you take a huge lot of stuff. And so if there is if the family member you have is at risk for melanoma, help me with this, you need to ask the surgeon, do you think this has a high probability of melanoma? Have you ever taken off a melanoma? Do you know what the standards for it? And if you don't get the right answers, you need to see an oncologist or somebody first. Is that sort of the way?
You're exactly right, Dr. Rick. You know, you can't tell by eyeballing a lesion on the skin whether it is melanoma or whether it's a benign lesion. Some people feel that they can, but it's not true. So the only way to do it is to biopsy it. Do an excisional biopsy, look at it under the microscope, and if it happens to be melanoma, then you have to do a wide excision and a deep excision. And so that's the rule of thumb. Don't let anyone cut anything off unless they have had experience in doing that.
I'll tell you a personal story, Dr. Vance. My cousin has melanoma, which puts me at a little bit of increased risk, and I went into the dermatologist, and I get regular checks for this because I'm light skinned and so forth. And so I pointed out this little mole and I said, I don't think this probably needs to come off, do you? And he said, no, what with your family history, let's go ahead and take it off. And he took off a huge piece. I mean, it was a little teensy weensy mole. And he took off this big round piece and I was blown away at how much he took off, but it was instructive to me because, previously, when I'd had these little moles removed, people took very small bites of them. But he explained to me that you can't take a risk because once you start digging around in there, you can spread the thing around.
You're exactly correct. The wide excision is the way to go. And if you're trying to figure out whether it's suspicious or not, there's an ABCD rule. A is asymmetry. In other words, one side doesn't look like the other. B, the border is irregular. It's not a complete circle. C, the color. One side may be hyperpigmented, be very dark. The other side may be light. And the diameter. Anything over 6 millimeters should be explored by a biopsy.
Paulette's still on the line with us. Can I ask you about the time progression?
Yes. When she hit it, she had a small mark on the side of her leg, and when she hit it, it started to bleed, and she really couldn't get it to stop, and that's when she went to the doctor, and they said, we need to do something about this. And so they did a very extensive procedure, removed it, and had it biopsied, and they said everything is fine, shouldn't have any more problems, et cetera. That was in January. In August, July, August, it grew back. And when she went back to the doctor, they said, well, we need to look at this further. And so they did an MRI. and found that it had spread into the lymph nodes in the groin area. So when they went in to remove it, and as you said, they did quite extensive removal, a large amount in the leg area. Plus, they had to go in and extract what lymph nodes they could in the groin area. They were quite slow, I feel, on starting any type of chemo or radiation because they first told her that it wasn't an internal cancer, that she didn't have to wait for anything to heal, and that they would start the chemo and the radiation, but they didn't. And when they finally got her on an experimental drug, she had a reaction to it, and so they had to stop that. And she was going to Memphis and was doing her chemo and oncology follow-up there. But somewhere around November, things went down.
Yes.
And the operation was in August. Things started going down in November, and one doctor gave her no hope, and so they went to the University of Tennessee. And in January, they said, I'm sorry, there is no hope.
So this was all
passed away in March.
Yeah, so this was within a year and a half. Is that...
From beginning, right. From, well, it was a year and 2 months, because it was from January to January when they gave her no hope.
Well, there are several points to be made here. We need to get on and let some other callers on. But
right.
The points are, you know, don't mess around with this tumor. It's a bad one. Number two, there is a lot of people do get these things off early and do very well.
The majority, right?
Yeah.
Yes. What I would say in summary is that if you have a lesion that's changing in size, shape, or color, or they're scaling or oozing or bleeding like your mother, or a change in sensation. Some people report they had that this place started to itch, and it, you know, I just want it off. Any of these three signs should alert you that you probably need to have the biopsy.
All right. Paulette, we thank you for your call. We appreciate it. Thank you. Our number is 1-877-MPB-RING, 1-877-MPB-RING. We are talking today about cancer. There's a PBS special that we highly recommend to you. It's called The Truth About Cancer. It is tonight at 7 o'clock on MPB television, and we will be on immediately after that program with some special guests and answers for questions on the phone and answers for your questions this morning, 1-877-MPB-RING. What's the biggest breakthrough in the last 20 years? Is it the treatment of juvenile leukemia? Is that?
Oh, I would say the Gleevec of the world are probably the biggest sort of storytellers. There are all kinds of ways of treating cancer, not just with cytotoxic drugs, but they are vascular endothelial growth receptor inhibitors and all kinds of things that change the environment around the tumor so that it can't get blood and food. And this is something we never used before.
Dr. Kraft, yesterday we had a visiting cancer specialist to the University Cancer Center who was a specialist in lymphoma, which is a tumor of the lymph nodes originally. And he talked about just what Dr. Vance was talking about, which are these sort of custom-made therapies for the various cancers that y'all are able to do now. So when someone comes in with a tumor, I guess the usual approach is to get as much information about that particular tumor, and then look and see what the experience with it's been, and pick the right thing. Is that the way it works?
That's exactly right. And we are looking at more targeted therapies, like Dr. Vance says. If there is a targeted therapy for the patient's disease and works for that specific patient, we will try to use that. There are lots of these agents still in clinical trials. And so if a patient has a disease who fits into that scenario, of course, a clinical trial is something you would want to consider.
I think we're starting. When I started oncology again 100 years ago, it was a shotgun sort of approach. And now we're honing down and using a rifle, if you can believe that. Not in everything, but in many new areas.
One of the areas that the program talked about a little bit that's going to talk about tonight is clinical trials. And depending on what folks want to ask as we go through the program, we can talk a little bit more about when you would want to participate in a clinical trial of an experimental agent versus taking so-called standard therapy.
All right. Let's welcome Monica from Iuka. Hi, Monica. How are you?
Hi. How are you?
Great.
I heard you talking about the Gleevec a minute ago. My mother was on it. She had ALL. And the question I had...
Now, for everybody listening, what is ALL? What is
acute lymphoblastic leukemia, I'm sorry.
All right.
She passed away in October from it.
Sorry.
And the question I have is, she was told that she was positive for the Philadelphia factor, and it's a genetic component. And I really don't understand, being her daughter, if there are any risk factors with it, with the leukemia or with the Philadelphia factor.
Okay, let's set this up. Acute lymphoblastic leukemia is when one of your lymphocytes goes crazy and starts, won't die, and just keeps growing and growing and growing, right?
Right.
And then this Gleevec is one of these custom-made designer treatments that
right.
works for this particular cancer.
Right. So Gleevec, typically we use it if you have a patient or know someone who has had CML, chronic myelogenous leukemia. That is usually those are usually associated with the Philadelphia chromosome positivity. There is a subset of patients with ALL who also are Philadelphia chromosome positive. And Gleevec targets this translocation or this chromosomal problem. And in CML and also in solid tumors such as GIST, I'm not sure if you've ever heard of that, it's gastrointestinal stromal tumors, Gleevec targets that. But in a subset of patients who have ALL and are Philadelphia chromosome positive, unfortunately, these patients do have a poor outcome. Now, we know that Gleevec targets that, and so that we can use that as a treatment. But as a whole, ALL patients who are Philadelphia chromosome positive tend to do worse, unfortunately.
Now, she wants to know if that has any prognostic thing for her family, the fact that this was a Philadelphia chromosome. Philadelphia chromosome?
What is that?
Yeah, what is that? Tell them what it is.
In simple terms, it's a chromosomal abnormality.
It's a freaky chromosome.
Right.
Y'all are able to look at all the chromosomes in these tumors, which is basically the machinery that makes the cell turn over.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it's a bunch of proteins, and you can actually look at them and characterize them and name them 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
And right. So Monica wants to know about her risk.
Yeah. So her mom had a weird chromosome
right.
called a Philadelphia chromosome.
To my knowledge, and I don't think there's been any documentation that this puts you or any of your other family members at increased risk.
Okay. That's
which is,
what I wanted
which
to
is
know.
Good news. So
yeah.
your mom basically had a drug that's usually used for another tumor, mm-hmm. used for this tumor as a rescue therapy.
Right.
And, it probably helped some, but not much. But she had a very bad tumor.
Right. And it did. It gave her 4.5 months of remission.
Great.
Which
was a miracle in itself.
Great.
And she got to come home and be home with her family. So it was a blessing. It was a miracle in itself. And we're very Gleevec fans, We give it full credit. So.
Great.
Right. Thank you for your call.
Thank you so
Monica,
much.
Monica, thanks. We appreciate your call. Thank you. We're going to take a break. We'd like to invite you to be a part of this discussion. Our number is 1-877-MPB-RING. 1-877-MPB-RING. We'd like to hear your story. We're talking about cancer today. We'd like to hear your success story, too, if you've got one. Give us a call. We'd like to hear from you at 1-877-MPB-RING. We are back after a break on MPB Think Radio. I'm Gene Edwards for MPB Think Radio. Every Thursday morning at 9, I'll be joined by veterinarian Dr. Troy Major and Mississippi Museum of Natural Science Director Libby Hartfield for a lively discussion about all of Mississippi's lively creatures, wild animals, house pets, and everything in between. Join us each Thursday morning at 9 for Creature Comforts on Think Radio MPB.
You're listening to Southern Remedy on MPB Think Radio. To call the show, dial 1-877-MPB-RING, 877-672-7464, or email southernremedy@mpbonline.org. Think Radio, Mississippi Public Broadcasting.
And we are here on Mississippi Public Broadcasting on Southern Remedy with Dr. Rick and our special guests, Dr. Barbara Kraft and Dr. Ralph Vance. Today, let's go to Gilbert, who's out there on the road to Memphis. Hi, Gilbert. How are you?
Hey, good morning.
Welcome
I'm
in.
Doing great and getting better.
Good.
And if you can give me some positive information on something a friend of mine told me the other day, you'll really be making me better. Well, he was telling me that he was listening either to MPB or 2020, he's blind, and that he was hearing about an experimental treatment for cancer where they take nanoparticles of gold, take these nanoparticles of gold and encase them in a plastic or some type of coating, inject them into the body. It's only had animal experimentation now. There are hooks of some type on these nanoparticles. They go through the bloodstream and seek out cancer cells indiscriminately. It doesn't go to a direct any type of cancer, just any cancer cell, attaches to those cells, and then they take some type of radio wave. It's not radiation, I don't believe, but some type of radio wave goes in, not a microwave, and heats up those nanoparticles that are attached to the cancer cell, and the heat kills the cancer cell.
Well, now,
and
Gilbert,
then they're eliminated, yes.
Okay, Gilbert, hold on. Dr. Vance has been nodding his head about this experimental.
And we've decided we're going to send you out to California where they develop this stuff and let you be their PR guy because you've got this thing down. That was very good and secondhand from your friend who was listening. So you're good. So what about that?
What is it?
Actually, the nanoparticles are very, very new on the front. Only in the last 2 years have they been really studied. And actually, the university now has some nanoparticles, and they're being studied in the dental school. I got a call from a person who said, we'll give, so much nanoparticles if you could take them. And so it made me have to investigate what we could do with them. Research is now being undergoing there at the university. We are hoping that it's going to shed some light on another modality for the fight against cancer. But you're very, very astute in bringing this up because not many people know about nanoparticles.
And are they in animal treatments right now or animal studies right now?
They have been in animal treatments, but what we're trying to do is to transition, if you will, to human subjects. It's still very, very early. This will not be anytime soon that will be done.
Now, what happens is in this technique is that an antibody to whatever you're trying to kill off is stuck to these little teensy-weensy-weensy particles, and then they're injected, and they go to where they're supposed to go. They're targeted particles, and then they do something to them to heat them up and destroy the target that they've gone to. So it's it sounds good.
But it's a ways down the line.
All right, way down the line.
If it can work as well as monoclonal antibodies, then it should work. And the fact that it can be more specific and attached to specific tumor cells as opposed to or normal cells, this is the problem right now. But it's very, very exciting, and you should be hearing and reading more about it in the future.
All right, Gilbert. Thank
right,
you.
I appreciate that. I have one question, if I may.
Okay.
What interests me so much is that I am running a little high on my PSA. When I first had a PSA, it came out 4.6, and my friend who was a urologist didn't even let me get out of his office before he was giving me a biopsy. Now it's up to, it's been up to about 7.8, and it's back down below that about 6.8, and now it's up to 7.5, and my urologist just says, we're going to wait on it. And my worst nightmare is cancer. I had my first wife passed away, and my mother passed away with cancer. So what should I do as far as my PSA goes?
You've got another nightmare. You're 73 and you have an elevated PSA. And
yes,
I'll let the cancer doctors tell you what to do, but I'll tell you what the answer is. Nobody knows what to do. That's the answer. The data aren't in on how to manage this. And a lot of people are doing very aggressive things, getting their prostate removed, getting radiotherapy, all kinds of other things for this. But we don't really know the natural history of this. And I want to make it easy on you talking about this. Is that true or not?
That is exactly right, Dr. Rick. What we don't know is if getting a PSA at all is changing anything in the course of the disease. You know, we as men, as we pass on to another life, probably are going to have prostate cancer, but it doesn't mean we're going to die from prostate cancer. And so we don't know whether discovering prostate cancer early is really helping in the fight against cancer.
In older people, it usually isn't as aggressive as in younger people,
that's
right?
That's exactly correct.
So the fact that he's 73, yes, statistically, we don't know about his particular cancer, and that's one of the reasons that...
And we don't even know if it's cancer.
No.
Right.
Because there are other things that can elevate PSAs that are benign. The other thing is that I would listen to your urologist and express your concern, and then let him be him or her be your guide.
One of the neat things is if you do end up having it, and it really doesn't sound a lot like you do, but if you do, the biopsy, the score on that biopsy can be very helpful in trying to figure out what's appropriate. And that's why they do all these multiple sticks. Gleason score?
It's a Gleason score, and it's rated from 1 to 10. And if it's lower than 7, then your prognosis is good. And if it's over 7, it means you probably need to do something about the tumor. So, you know, Dr. Rick was correct. If it's bothering you, get it biopsied and see where you stand. And if it's negative, pardon me?
I think he's got the same cell service I have.
All right.
I think you gave him what he needed to know.
Good luck to you. May I ask the same question of you, Dr. Kraft? If you are a woman in your 70s or early 80s and you're mm-hmm. diagnosed with breast cancer,
mm-hmm.
What
would I do?
What would you do?
I think it would depend on how early it was caught, number one. And there are different things we look at as far as breast cancer, things such as the estrogen and progesterone receptor status.
Right.
And there are actually hormonal therapies that we can use to treat breast cancer with as well. And it would also depend on my comorbid conditions.
So basically, if my grandma develops breast cancer that's fairly well localized,
mm-hmm.
you would stage her, find out whether it was just local,
yes,
or more disseminated.
Right.
And you would look at the characteristics of the cancer, whether it was had A, B, and C proteins on it and all that
exactly.
kind of stuff. And then on the basis of a huge amount of information that you have available to her, you could tell her statistically what her probability of doing well with this treatment versus that treatment would be. And you have a whole bunch of treatments. Is that right?
That's exactly right. And every patient is different. And if she was otherwise healthy, then she could probably tolerate a little bit more aggressive therapy, but it would depend on what she wanted.
And I have to bring up that, 1% of breast cancer does occur in men. And it's the same sort of role that you have to deal with. And Paulette Carruth, of course, has done a lot of
right.
Sort of comments because he had breast cancer and is very aggressive now toward alerting men that there is a possibility.
And the other question about, well, that, yes, absolutely right, in men.
Okay. We have some lines open at 1-877-MPB-RING. If you want to talk about breast cancer, and I think all of us have had family members who have had a prolonged course with cancer, one type or the other. I certainly have. My grandfather had prostate cancer and was treated very vigorously for that, had all kinds of complications, and died of something else. But we didn't get a lot of support from the community, from the doctors or anybody else. We pretty much had to deal with all this ourselves. And that was, of course, a long time ago. What do you do if you don't have a lot of folks you can talk to and suddenly you're diagnosed as having cancer? Where do you go? What kind of
support systems are much better now, aren't they?
Absolutely. You can call your local American Cancer Society. The American Cancer Society has a call center in Austin, Texas that answers all the phones and will direct your call and answer your question to someone in your state. And so all you have to do is dial the number, which is in any phone book. It's 1-800-234.
We'll have it in a minute.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's 1-800-ACS-2345. 1-800-ACS-2345.
I'll get 50 lashes for not knowing that one.
And there's a great bunch of cancer websites. Cancer.gov is the NCI's website, and cancer.org is your website, American Cancer Society. Lots of, and those are great websites. I've been on those, and they're very
helpful. They can link you to all kinds of answering questions for your particular situation.
And Dr. Kraft, may I ask the question that flew out of my head because of the mad cow disease a moment ago? Numbers of women these days are having diagnoses of their mothers or grandmothers,
right,
or whatever, and then being moved themselves to have their own breasts removed as a precaution. Or is that under what circumstances?
One of the circumstances in which many women get bilateral mastectomies is what you're referring to, is if they have lobular carcinoma in situ or ductal carcinoma in situ. Different if they often have had a breast biopsy and had some kind of abnormal finding, some of these women will go ahead and opt for surgery.
Do you recommend it?
Again, I think it's patient-dependent. If you have one or more first-degree relatives, I definitely think you should start watching and having mammograms early.
Do you do that genetic test at your cancer center? There's some kind of genetic screen?
The BRCA 1 and 2. Yes, we do. That is available.
And that's
at
a big boogaboo as to whether or not you ought to get that thing
That's exactly right.
Maybe somebody will call about that.
All right. Here is Ruth in Wilmer, Alabama. Hi, Ruth.
Hey.
Welcome.
I know Wilmer well. I got two traffic tickets going through there.
We have no policemen anymore. You can come back.
I hope y'all have stopped that because my insurance rate went up a whole lot.
And you have to be very careful, but it's better now.
Okay, good.
Yes.
All right. Okay.
What's your question, Ruth?
Okay, I'm a breast cancer survivor. In 96, I had an estrogen-receptive tumor on my right side. It was not in my lymph nodes. Did chemo and radiation, had lumpectomy. And then in 2002, I had another small one in my other breast that was unrelated to the first. It was not estrogen receptive and was not in my lymph nodes either. They were both taken out by lumpectomies. Anyway, do I need to be on any kind of medication? I assume my cancer is completely gone. I have no symptoms.
Okay, so let's just set this up. You've had the misfortune of having not one, but both of your breasts involved, and you've had lumpectomies on both sides. One of them was estrogen receptor positive, and one was estrogen receptor negative.
Right.
So now we've got the expert. But bilateral breast cancer is not that uncommon, is it, Dr. Kraft? In fact, a lot of people have that, right?
That is true. Bilateral is not uncommon, and it is also not uncommon for patients to have changes in their estrogen receptor status. It is not uncommon for people to originally be ER positive and then on subsequent diagnoses be ER negative. I'm assuming after you were treated in 92, were you placed on tamoxifen?
In 96, I did five years of tamoxifen. In 2002, I just did radiation, no medication.
And, you know, sometimes the hormonal treatment along with chemotherapy and radiotherapy can change the face of a tumor in the other breast should it occur. And so, you know, if you've had this excised, then I think you've done the right thing.
I would agree.
So they think you've had the right thing done, but you need to have regular follow-up, and I know you're getting it.
That's right.
All right, Ruth, thanks. We appreciate your call. We have callers on the line from Vicksburg and Sardis. We'll get to them, and we'll try to get to your question, too. It's Southern Remedy on MPB Think Radio.
Hi, I'm Michelle Martin. Tell me more. That's the name of my new interview show, and seriously, I want to know more. And I know you do, too, about news and events, about people and ideas. I want to hear the whole story from many different perspectives. I want to have the difficult conversations, and I want to hear the truth. Tell me more from NPR News.
9 p.m. on MPB, Mississippi Public Broadcasting.
You're listening to Southern Remedy on MPB Think Radio. To call the show, dial 1-877-MPB-RING, 877-672-7464, or email southernremedy@mpbonline.org. Think Radio, Mississippi Public Broadcasting.
And again, we want to remind you about our special tonight on MPB Television. It's The Truth About Cancer. It starts at 7 o'clock, and we'll be on at 8:30 with another televised edition of Southern Remedy, which will be a chance for these folks to come be with us.
Now, all of Gene's fan club needs to turn off that debate if it's still
Don't
on.
Don't mention the debate.
And I didn't mention the debate.
If you mention it, then they won't know.
Okay, all right. And see how much better Gene looks on TV than he looks on radio. So this is your big chance tonight.
I've been on TV for years. They know how bad I look.
Well, I don't know. We have a special group of listeners. Ours have a higher intellect than
the
average.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Let's go to Shirley in Vicksburg. Hi, Shirley. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks.
Welcome.
Thank you. My sister died of ovarian cancer in 1988. My father passed away from bladder cancer. My mother was heart, but there is strong cancer genes in our family. I've heard on the internet that you can still get ovarian cancer even if you've had your ovaries removed. And so I have questions about, you know, what I get yearly mammograms, yearly physicals, just your thoughts on what a person should do on a yearly basis to make sure you're cancer-free.
I think you're doing exactly the right thing. Again, you do need to be having regular physical exams. You're up to date with your mammograms. I'm assuming you're up to date with colonoscopy, things like that.
Yes, I am.
I mean, that's really all you can do, and pay close attention to your body. If you have any symptoms that you're concerned about, then you need to discuss them with your doctor. And you're right. You did decrease your risk significantly by having your ovaries removed, but there, unfortunately, is still a small risk.
You're way ahead of the game from most people in just knowing that fact. And as you know, ovarian cancer has this kind of a silent presenter, and people have various complaints but think it's something else. And so I think you're attuned to your body and keep it that way.
But her risks are much lower than they would have been if she hadn't had her ovaries removed, right?
I mean, so but there still is a risk.
But it's a risk driving across the street.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So her risk is pretty low, right?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Shirley,
okay,
thanks.
That's good.
We appreciate your call. That was the first mention that we've had of having an exam for colon cancer, a colonoscopy. There are so many of these issues that need to be addressed ahead of time. I mean, like, don't smoke. Have your colon exam. Do those kinds of things.
A couple of years ago, the American Cancer Society, the Diabetes Association, and the National Heart Association got together and said, we need to make four simple gestures that are understandable to Americans and the world, if you will. And they were to don't smoke, eat right. If your basal metabolic index is greater than 25, which is just showing if you have a lot of fat or if you have a lot of lean, mm-hmm. then you should lose weight and you should exercise daily. And so those are four simple things you can do that will decrease your risk of getting malignancy, of having a stroke, of having diabetes, or having cardiovascular disease. So thanks for bringing that up.
So it can still happen, but you can certainly decrease your risks.
Absolutely.
All right. Let's try to get one more call on the air. Here's Brenda in Sardis. Hi, Brenda.
Hi.
Welcome.
I have a success story. My mother in 1957 survived melanoma. And when you were talking about removing a large area when melanoma is removed, I thought about her because she had this huge melanoma on her back for many years. It had spread and it had begun to itch, but she did not go to the doctor for that. She went for a broken hand, And while she was there, she said, would you notice this on my back? And the doctors discovered it was melanoma. They sent her to St. Joseph in Memphis. And the doctors told us there was very little hope. But they removed a half of from her spine over to her armpit and muscle and tissue and her lymph nodes under her arm. And they got it all. And she's still alive today at 86 years
Wonderful.
Old.
Wonderful.
Congratulations.
Wonderful. Melanoma is a funky tumor. In some people, they actually go away. It's very unusual, but it's been documented. The immune system actually recognizes melanoma in some folks and can destroy it. And I suspect that she did have a melanoma there, and her immune system, fortunately, was containing it during those years. But, you know, what happens is as soon as something else happens to you, you get a heart attack or a stroke or you get some other illness and your immune system gets revved down, then those things start spreading like crazy. So that may be what's going on. But that is a wonderful thing, and she's had a wonderful gift of years to be with you guys. So that's a great story because we've had some sad ones.
And her docs really did a brilliant thing. The lymph node drainage from a melanoma on the back is difficult to trace. And so the correct thing is to take as much as you can all the way up to the armpit, just like they did. And so I think that they were very astute in what they did for your mom.
For them to do that in 1957.
Absolutely.
That's kind of amazing. Surprising.
They were ahead of the curve.
That's right.
Absolutely. That's right. Well, tell her that you shared her story, and we wish her well and you as well.
Thank you.
Thanks for sharing that.
Thanks. We appreciate your call. All right. So where do you go now with these experimental procedures? What do you hope for next?
Well, you know, the pediatricians have, over the years, registered 95% of childhood cancers onto clinical trials. Now, I guess how many times adults are registered on clinical trials? Less than 10%.
Really?
And so what we need to do is to encourage people to seek. You can get the same medicines here in Mississippi as you can get anywhere in the world, essentially.
These newer medicines.
The newer medicines, exactly.
By participating in these clinical trials that the Cancer Center, the UMC Cancer Center has, we're very fortunate to have a very, very sophisticated cancer center here at UMC.
Dr. Kraft, when can you request that you participate in one of these trials?
Sure, you can definitely request it, and we as physicians also should offer it to our patients as an option. But anytime a patient is interested in a clinical trial or some other form of treatment, I encourage them to ask their physician.
Well, once again, there'll be information on those clinical trials and lots of other new research and information on that program, which we'll be on tonight. It's called The Truth About Cancer. It starts at 7 on MPB TV. All of us will be there immediately after the program, along with an audience of wonderful people who have come to be with us and your phone calls from home, too. So welcome, and we thank you for that. Southern Remedy is a co-production of University Medical Center and Mississippi Public Broadcasting Think Radio. For UMC, our producer content coordinator is Janice Quinn. Chief researcher is Dr. Casey Harbor. And for MPB, technical producer and technical director is Ezra Wall. For Dr. Rick, I'm Gene. We invite you to join us on TV tonight, starting at 7 on MPB TV.